Glory to Jesus Christ. My name is Father David Abernethy, if you don't already know. I've been a priest for 28 years now, and prior to that, I was a member of the Congregation of the Oratory for 35 years. And so I've been around for quite a bit of time serving as a priest, and it was most of it was pre-internet. My first year, certainly as a college student, I think Father Miron mentioned 1983, which is when I began college, and I was already in seminary when the internet became more accessible. So it really wasn't part of my experience in the early years of my life, or college years, or even in early years of my priesthood. My focus this afternoon is going to be on the positive experience of using technology. I haven't always been one who's used it or wanted to use it, and one of the things I dislike the most is a microphone. And but over the course of time, and sometimes out of necessity, I began to use it much more. And so the topic that I have today is the positive fruits of podcasting, Zoom groups, online spiritual direction and pastoral counseling, the breadth of outreach, depth of discussion, and enduring relationships that can evolve from them. So a little bit more of a positive approach to it. And if I had my talk sort of under the umbrella of one thought, it would be from a saint from the Eastern Church, Serbian Orthodox Bishop Nikolai Velimirovic. He lived between 1886 and 1956. And he was one who experienced the use of technology in a negative fashion, and certainly used as a source of force. It was during the Second World War in particular that he received the worst treatment through it, and spent many years in the Camp Dachau because of his priesthood, eventually immigrating to the United States for the last 10 years of his life. And he wrote a little work called Ethics and Technology, if you want to look it up. It's on the internet site orthodoxinfo.com, or just look up Ethics and Technology underneath his name. I was going to read the whole reflection to you, but it's a good 5 pages long, and I didn't want to torture you through that. But I just have one paragraph I want to share with you that I think sums up his thought. He writes, "Many complain against technology. Many accuse modern technology for all the woes in the world. Is technology really to blame, or those who create technology and use it? Is a wooden cross to blame if somebody crucifies someone on it? Is a hammer to blame if a neighbor breaks his neighbor's skull? The same pipes can be used for drinking water or the sewer. Evil does not come from unfeeling dead technology, but from the dead hearts of people." From the dead hearts of people. It was this line that captured my thoughts and imagination. From the dead hearts of people. Technology is not something alive. It's something that we create with our hands and our intellect. It's how we use it that makes it either something that is creative or destructive. And I think that's important to keep in mind. As Christian men and women, we are not Luddites. We do not have an aversion to technology. In fact, the church has often been at the forefront of the creation of so many things throughout the generations, fostering the sciences and the arts, often funding them from its own means. And so it's important that we do keep this in mind, that it's dead hearts that really make technology destructive. And that pulls us towards asceticism. How it is that we live our Christian life. It is really the purification of the heart, or the darkening of the heart, that is the focus that we should have. Not simply technology itself. St. John Cassian says the immediate goal of the spiritual life is purity of heart. That all that we do, our prayer life, all of our ascetic practices, fasting, vigils, spiritual reading, the study of the scriptures, all of this is meant to purify the heart, to order our desires, our appetites towards their great end, toward God. This is what we struggle with internally, a disorder, a dis-ease that has come about through sin. And it is precisely this disorder then that affects the way that we use technology. So if we are worried about where technology is going to take us, we should be most worried about what's going on within our hearts, whether we love God above all things, whether we live the first commandment out of which all the others flow. This is what affects and shapes our life. As I thought about my use of technology, as I mentioned, it was limited for so many years, at least in terms of the way that we experience it now, the use of the internet, recording devices, video live streaming, as Father Miron mentioned in his talk. But for myself, in ministry in particular, I always focus more on a personalist kind of approach to ministry, following a great patron of mine, St. Philip Neri. Many of you know him from the Counter-Reformation period. He lived at the same time as St. Ignatius of Loyola, Teresa of Avila, Camillus de Lellis, many great saints during this period of time when the church was afflicted. It also gave rise to great individuals like Philip Neri. And his approach was very personal, to engage men and women on the street about the faith, to hold small groups in person to discuss the fathers of the church, in particular the desert fathers. A little plug for my own studies. He used to carry around with him a book of St. John Cassian, the conferences, as well as loving St. John Climacus. So here we have somebody during perhaps one of the most difficult times of the church, the Reformation and the period that followed after it, engaging people in a very simple, straightforward way. He was the opposite of someone that he admired very much, a Dominican named Savonarola, a fiery preacher, and one who was eventually, though, burned at the cross because of his zeal and the nature of it that, left unchecked, led him into some problems with the church itself. But Philip admired him and loved him for that zeal, but took another approach, gentle, direct, very personal, simple conversations. And so throughout the course of my priesthood, it was always face-to-face groups. I never wanted to lose that. There's something about being able to look another person in the eyes or have them ask you a question directly, to talk with them afterwards, either in a social way or to have them ask questions or ask for an appointment for confession or spiritual direction. Never wanted to lose that. So the use of technology as a priest to engage people in an effective way seemed remote to me at best. It changed in the year 2013 for me, when I began podcasting these groups I was having on the fathers. One of the reasons this began was simply because the groups were lectio continua over the course of years. And so if a person was sick or had another obligation and missed a group, they wouldn't be cut off from the flow of discussion. They would be able to go back afterwards and listen to what the group had talked about. We always moved very slow, maybe 3 or 4 paragraphs a week through going through the Fathers. But the comments, the discussion was always deep and beautiful. And so it was at their request that we began to record these groups over time. Hesitantly, I agreed to do it, but in the beginning it was very discreet. Nobody even had to know it was taking place. All it was at that time was my iPhone sitting on the table next to me. Nothing overly expensive or nothing overly complex. It had its limitations, of course, but it did the job. It didn't radically change the feel of the group, in other words. Someone brought up the idea, though, of going to live stream via YouTube. Let's try this to see how many people we could reach out to in a direct fashion so they could actually participate in the group while it was happening and even type their questions out that someone who was moderating could convey to me. It was a complete and utter failure. The idea of being on camera live shut the group down completely. Everybody felt so self-conscious that it paralyzed them, and you'd see them leaning back in their chairs to be out of line of the camera. So that lasted about a month, and then we quit because the group was dwindling. They told us very clearly, this kind of technology isn't for us. So we went back to simply podcasting. And eventually it began to bear fruit. People, I discovered, surprisingly, other than my mother, were listening to the podcast. And I'd get little bits of feedback here and there, either through Facebook or by an email. Thank you for having these groups on the Fathers, because there was something eminently practical about them. They spoke about Christian praxis, how it is to live the Christian life. How do I live a holy life in this world? What do I do about the passions that I struggle with, the sin that seems to have me in its grip so deeply that it's more like an addiction that I can't break away from it? The Fathers, as you know, were the first depth psychologists. They knew the human mind and heart so well because they entered into the desert, stripping themselves of all things. They were, in a way, Luddites. They wanted nothing to exist except themselves and God. No impediment between themselves and that encounter. And in doing that, in the laboratory of the desert, they came to understand not only the workings of the mind and the heart very clearly, that anger can exist in the midst of the desert when you're alone, and be directed at an inanimate object, a piece of wood that gets in your way, but also this deep intimacy in the loneliness, the silence, the isolation of the desert, this intimacy with God can be unparalleled. They began to see that God speaks through silence, and they began to hear them at the very depths of their being as they entered into it. So gradually people began to listen, and they began to wonder why this was the first time they were hearing about the Desert Fathers. People in their 20s, 30s, 60s, 70s, 80s coming to the group. Why is this treasure house only now becoming accessible? And part of it, to be honest with you, is technology. Certainly the printing press, but none of these things were in English until perhaps the last decade. Saint Isaac the Syrian, one of the most brilliant minds in the spiritual tradition, It's been said, if all the Desert Fathers' writings were lost, and you only had the ascetical homilies of Isaac the Syrian, you could move from being a novice in the spiritual life to the heights of sanctity. That's how beautiful his writings were. And they were right. They are that beautiful. But it's only been in the last 20 years that that has been available to us in English. In fact, the monastery that produced it had to send a man away to learn Syriac in order to get a good translation of it. So we benefit, in a sense, from this technology of making many of the things that have been inaccessible to previous generations now at our fingertips. We can make use of and read those who lived in the hearts of the desert of Egypt or Syria, where we lack spiritual elders in our day, where we know that poverty in our generation, we can go directly to the fathers and allow them to guide us step by step in the spiritual life in battle. So this is what people began to see, and what I certainly began to see over the course of years, almost 30 years of leading these groups, but not until 2013 did I begin, as I say, podcasting. However, as you all know, in the year 2020, all this changed with the pandemic. And this required adaptation and discovery of new means. As you know, the pandemic shut everything down, including the churches. 30 million elderly experienced the isolation of the pandemic alone, in their own homes by themselves. When it first began, none of us knew how long it was going to take, how severe it was going to be, how long we were going to be kept in isolation. And perhaps the church panicked, but even the churches themselves were shut down. People did not have access to the sacraments. So on a regular basis, they were kept alone and unnourished. And I was hearing over and over again that people were hurting from this isolation and the lack of accessibility to what was at the very heart of their life as Catholic Christians. And even when we opened things up, it was all very limited. I don't know if you have ever been to the oratory, but our chapel seats 90 people, and we are only allowed to have a quarter of the number of people who could fit in the chapel there present for the liturgy. All had to be spaced out wearing masks, and we had to purify the chapel after each liturgy. And the most pathetic thing was, in the beginning, after receiving Holy Communion, people had to immediately leave the church. And one of the saddest days of my life was when I went outside after Mass, and I saw people in this little area outside the exit door making their act of thanksgiving outside of the church. It's that moment we ceased following that rule. We weren't going to do it anymore because it had become absurd. I digress a little bit here with this, but you get the point. Confessions were initially heard outside. The gratitude of people was extraordinary. In the heat and rain and snow, they were coming in droves. We would have three priests hearing confessions at one time, and in the rain, they would kneel down in the puddles and say, "Thank you, Father, for being here." It was surprising. Such a love of the sacraments that they were deprived of, that they were willing to do anything to receive them again. So seeing this isolation, I knew that I had to do something, perhaps out of my comfort zone, and make use of technology in such a way that I could stay connected with all those I loved and all those I had cared for decades. So I began using certainly the podcast, but something new something that I had never heard of until the pandemic arose, called Zoom. And I wondered at first whether it would be something that would work, because it was the same kind of thing. People would be seen on screen, and perhaps they would panic and not like it. But much to my surprise, the response was very different. I chose a text that was something that was very intimate and personal. Has anybody here read St. Theophan's Spiritual Life? St. Theophan the Recluse was a Russian bishop, first a recluse for, I think, 30 years. But this young woman of 18 wrote him a letter asking him to be her spiritual director, her spiritual father, to, quote, show her how to embrace the full dignity of being a Christian woman. And so Theophan enters into this correspondence with her over the course of years. And she eventually moves to Moscow, and they keep doing it. And she reaches the height of sanctity through this bond of love that existed between them, a bond of love that developed through writing letters to each other. So we chose this work to use, and we began using Zoom. And much to my surprise, the experience was exceptional. People responded to it greatly. The numbers of the groups doubled in size. Suddenly, all the people who had listened by podcast and liked the group for years now could participate directly, and not simply by watching the group online through live streaming, but actually being there present and being able to communicate with everybody in the group and see everybody in the group. The comments, the questions were very deep, with the doubling of the size from people in every state in the nation now. The comments and questions grew in their depth. People brought a new perspective to the discussion. And we began to go deeper and deeper into text in ways that I hadn't myself, even though I had read these books many times over throughout the course of 30 years. This discussion with people from various backgrounds who've loved the fathers, who've read them themselves, all of a sudden opened up the text for us in new ways. They did not feel conspicuous through the use of it. They could shut off the camera if they wanted, but it didn't feel as though they were exposed or being watched. Everybody was being watched, and that somehow took off the edge. So it gave them a freedom to engage during this time of the pandemic that was debilitating to the world. All of a sudden, they found intimacy again, people sharing the same desire, the same love that they shared, and not in a superficial way. If any of you have ever listened to my groups, you know they are painfully slow. If we get through three paragraphs a night, we are lucky. I once read, are you familiar with Goodreads? It's where people make comments about books that they've read and share the books that they've read. And somebody made a comment that they found out that there was a group reading St. John Cassian's conferences. And he said the group was painfully slow to begin with, and I almost couldn't stand it. But then over the course of time, I began to see the wisdom in it, that it was like group Lectio Divina, a prayerful, meditative reading that wasn't simply for the sake of information, wasn't for the sake of entertaining, but rather of satisfying something far deeper, the desire for God, the desire for holiness, the desire for conversion of life. So nothing changed about the style of the group, despite the use of the technology. In fact, the technology, as I said, enriched it, broadened it out. And to this, then, we added another group. So two groups during a week. And this one we began at the beginning of Lent with a book that especially Eastern Christians love, The Ladder of Divine Ascent. The first group 96 people showed up on Zoom, to the point that we were fearful that because of our subscription, people were going to get cut off once we reached 100. It was an amazing thing that all of a sudden, people had access to discuss something that they had been told over and over again is one of the most beautiful and significant works in the spiritual tradition, but never had the opportunity to read it. I don't know if many of you know this, but it is the first spiritual work that came over with Columbus on one of the ships, translated into Spanish. It's the first spiritual work on this continent. So valued in Romania, where they did a little psychological study of families there, and one of the parts of the study was what books people and families read. And in the majority of households, 80% of the households of Romanians, they had two books, the Bible and the Ladder of Divine Ascent. So suddenly, people had access to this. And I'd even been told over the years, you don't want to expose people to this, it's dangerous. They'll get confused or they'll fall into excess, extremes. Of course they will, when nobody is there to teach them about it, nobody's there to read it with them. And so it's an easy thing to set aside responsibility for the care of souls by saying something is too difficult. And yet here we had discovered through the use of technology that there was a profound thirst, almost insatiable. Now we had people not simply in every state, but from every continent. It never ceases to surprise me. Every week there is a man from Japan who joins us for the group. It's morning his time. But he gets every morning on Wednesdays to join us for this group. And so all of this was now accessible. And beyond this, the use of Zoom allowed for other things. Chat during the group where people could add their comments, add questions that they did not feel comfortable expressing out loud. We could put links to things referred to during the group that they could go to later, handouts that were produced that they could print out for themselves and use at their leisure. And then something very personal began to take place as well. Individuals clicked in these groups through the internet who would have never otherwise connected with each other or known each other, suddenly found somebody that shared the same aspirations, same hopes, the same loves, and began to connect with each other outside of the group, to visit each other, to talk to each other regularly. Some of the other developments that came from this, and even more surprising, were on a pastoral and spiritual level. The pandemic, as I mentioned, had an effect on spiritual direction and pastoral counseling. My background is also in psychoanalysis, so in the course of pastoral counseling, I've worked with people across the spectrum. And so to lose connection with people that you have been talking to for a decade or more can be devastating, especially where there are not only spiritual wounds, but psychological struggles, all added to by the pandemic and the isolation that it brought. And so more and more I had people asking if I would be willing to do spiritual direction by phone or by Zoom. Again, this would have been the furthest thing from my mind a few years before this. The personal connection, I thought, would be absolutely impossible. How do you talk to someone about the spiritual life? Or more importantly, how do you talk to them about the emotional life if there is a distance between you of 1,000 miles? All of a sudden I was talking to people everywhere from Texas to California to Canada. I realized that it would take much more time. The willingness to ask questions, to go very slowly, to let them set the pace. I would have to alter the way that I did things, but nonetheless, the technology was allowing me to do something, to stay connected to people who felt lost and isolated during this very difficult time. And not only did it allow something simply to continue, but allowed it to be extraordinarily fruitful. These conversations, whether by phone or through the internet, by Zoom, were very rich and deep. Not something that I would have trusted. More challenging on a personal level, but not impossible. Some people were living in areas where there was a small Catholic population. And so even outside of the whole issue of the pandemic, they felt as though they had no support structure living the Catholic Christian life, and certainly could not find spiritual directors. They weren't near any monasteries or religious communities that would provide them with an opportunity for spiritual direction, with experienced directors, nor could they find priests who weren't so overwhelmed by taking care of multiple parishes or limited because of the pandemic to talk with them. And so suddenly many of these people began to reach out, asking to be able to do spiritual direction. Most of my work as a priest from the very beginning involved this. Again, an imitation of Philip Neri, but it was something that I think I was more personally inclined to. Typically 25 hours a week as a priest spent in appointments. And this grew, certainly during the pandemic. And I'd say a good third to a half of those people have been by the phone or through the internet. So something beautiful. And again, always looking back to Philip Neri, who had to meet the challenge of his own age, the challenge of the Reformation, how to engage people about the faith in a very personal way to open them up to the beauty of it. So what are we to do in a generation that is often lost, as Father Miron mentioned, in the technology in a way that is disconnected from God and leads to what St. Nikolai said, dead hearts. Hearts that are not alive through the gift of the Spirit, have no longing for God within them, no interest in Him. How to speak to a generation that has grown up with this kind of technology, with this internet. And so something demands the church to enter into this discussion. As I mentioned, we're not Luddites. In every generation, the church has been compelled to engage people in the realm of the arts and the sciences. Sometimes that relationship has not been an easy one. The one that comes to mind to me is psychology. There was a rebirth with Freud, who went deeper than anyone before him. But as you know, Freud was an atheist. And his atheism gave rise to great suspicion of psychology and psychoanalysis as a whole. And certainly, analysts had their suspicions of religion. They saw religion simply as a psychological construct, something that is produced by our minds to make us feel comfortable in a frightening world. We create this all-powerful father figure. It's an auxiliary construction. So for 100 years, there was not that dialogue that took place. Much, I think, to the loss of the church, as well as those in the world who make use of psychotherapy. Freud was right on so many levels. On so many levels, in reading his writings, we would all say yes. It's become part of common parlance. Anytime we talk about defense mechanisms, various personality types, all of those things, that goes back to Freud. We use it daily as if somehow we've come up with it. And yet, psychology is wounded itself. Psychotherapy means the healing of the soul, not the healing of the emotions of the mind or the way that we think, but the healing of the soul, of the whole person. And as I mentioned, the Desert Fathers were the first psychotherapists, psychologists. They knew the workings of the human mind and heart better than anyone. Think of what the church could have done of taking the fathers and engaging the modern world, what that would have opened up in terms of not only emotional healing, but spiritual healing. And so it's for our generation to enter into that dialogue, but most importantly, to enter into the study of the fathers, to internalize it so that we can articulate it and use every form possible to communicate it. This is our responsibility, to go to all nations and to preach the good news. All nations is not simply geographical. We go to every place that we have to in order to make Christ known. And that includes every form of technology. We reshape it. We allow God to shape it by the gift of the Spirit in order that it might bear fruit that is worthy of the kingdom, that really does help the souls of men and women. There have been a few other developments out of this that have been surprising. I have never been much about numbers or cared too much about how many followers I had on Facebook or on Twitter. And so I never paid attention to it because I figured, who's going to care about this priest in Pittsburgh, and even less about one who talks always about the church fathers or the desert fathers. But there was this growing interest. The internet, social media, is the new desert. It's void of life. And it's part of the Christian responsibility to bring life where it does not exist. You don't have to be on Twitter for very long to see the aggression, the hypersensuality, the contempt that people have for each other, and the morbid delight they take in it. If there's any place that the gentleness, the tenderness, and the love of a Christian is needed, in our day is there, because this is where people communicate. And slowly, over the course of time, and this is the important thing, we have to plant seeds, and perhaps that seed is the size of a mustard seed, to be able to engage millions. And it may seem nothing or insignificant, but over the time it can grow and become something great and beautiful. Gradually, more people became interested in the fathers. Catholic Gentlemen, if anybody heard of that online site, did a little episode on the spirituality of the Desert Fathers. A man named Lofton, who has a website, Reason and Theology, has done many episodes, and I'm to join Deacon Anthony Dragani in one soon. Multiple requests for retreats and days of recollection precisely on the Desert Fathers has come through the use of the internet, from people being exposed to it and its beauty. Even a movie, EWTN, this is just between us, although I know it's going to be podcast, maybe Father Miron could edit this out. They're doing a movie on St. Paul, the first hermit. And they finished filming, but they're going to interview priests who have some knowledge on the Desert Fathers. It's going to be a docudrama that is going to then be put out by the EWTN station. And so great things can take place. More priests are having access, priests and laymen and women, are having access to people that they never otherwise would be able to reach. And there has to be a genuineness about this, and this will be my final remarks. It can't come from nowhere. We cannot compete with the world in making it exciting or entertaining. You've probably experienced many Catholic sites doing that. The very quick edits, very quick speaking, very surface kind of material. There's always a temptation to do that, to speak to this generation in the way that we think they want to be spoken to, or to tell them the things that we think that they want to hear. It's incumbent upon us to engage people out of the genuineness of a heart that has been formed by the Spirit of God, out of a heart that has been pure and made pure through the ascetic life and enriched through the holy sacraments. I had a seminary professor once say, "Nemo dat quod non habet." You can't give what you don't have. We can't give what we don't have, in whatever form that might be. Speaking directly to a person or speaking to them online, it has to come out of the depth of the relationship with Christ, or where we merely add to the noise of the world. Technology does not save. We have one Savior. It's not technology. It's not those of us who use technology. It's Christ alone. And so let us pray that God would guide us and our generation in the use of the many forms of technology that are presented to us, and that they would all be used for the glory of God. Glory to Jesus Christ. Glory forever. Any questions or comments? Father Miron, where can find... Yes, it's called philokalia.podbean.com. And it's a ministry called Philokalia Ministries. So very easy to find on the internet. We've just passed 500 podcasts. And so they're all free online and easy to find. And I'd encourage you to join the Zoom groups. It's surprising. And if one is able to do spiritual reading in this way, I think it's the best of all. Often Lectio Divina is a difficult thing to learn. But somehow being in the group that is prayerfully approaching a text, you begin to see the Spirit act in an incredibly powerful way. And God teaches us, shows us, the way to enter into these texts and to listen. The internet's a powerful thing. It's just we have to slow ourselves down in order to listen to the things that are important and to filter out all the garbage. And most of it is garbage. And I think that's what leads us, I think, to want to reject it wholeheartedly. I've had a love-hate relationship with the internet for years. I've gone off and on of Facebook probably 50 times, telling everybody, "See you later, I'm done with this." Because I can see the effect that Father Miron talked about. It can take over one's life until we do have the priority set straight. Immersion in our life in Christ. And then we can participate in it freely without it taking over. Yes. Well, I'm going to do both. I don't think there is, even as good as it has been, I don't think there is any replacement for an in-person group. That Christianity has always had this direct encounter with the other. This is what we're called to have with God. This is why what Father Miron mentioned, watching liturgy en masse, does not do it. And the quicker we can get away from that, the better. And the same is true with these groups. Some of them I will keep forever online because there are so many who participate. But there's a lot to be taught and a lot of people who don't go on the internet. And so one has to provide for the needs of all. But I think that personal element is something that's important. And I don't think we would want to go down that line because this is where the world is going. And I think this is part of the poverty of our generation. People have lost the capacity to be able to have a conversation with each other or to have an argument. There is that disconnect because of the forum, the media, that doesn't allow people to see the other. They might see them on the screen, but they lose sight of the person. And this affects the way that we talk to people in dramatic ways, unless there are people in the group that understand that and manage it. But most often, those discussions online are unmanaged and uncontrolled. Just kicking somebody off of Twitter or off of Facebook doesn't accomplish anything. And so there is something that, there is a breakdown there of an essential personalism that we have to hold on to as a church, that even while we make use of this technology, that we understand that we are called to a personal relationship with God. And that is not going to come through this form. We have to, this is why he's given himself to us in the Holy Eucharist. And the most concrete thing for us as human beings, eating. That we receive him, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist. And you're not going to do that via live stream. And however deep the prayer might be or however eloquent the preaching might be, watching it online is always going to be radically lacking. And we can't forget that. Any other questions, thoughts, comments? Okay, thank you. I'm always willing to talk afterwards too, or while we have our little respite and something to eat.